Thanks, man.
Stuff like that.
Committee on Environment and Natural Resources will come to order. Apologize for the delay. We had some technical difficulties with the recording device, and it's very important for the public that we have a accurate record of our business. The first bill on the agenda is the confirmation of Commissioner Paul Egger, Pollution Control Agency. Commissioner, thank you for your patience. We've had you on the agenda in the past and have inadvertently had to bump you, but thank you for your patience and bearing with us. Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, thank you again. My name is Paul Egger. I'm the commissioner of the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. And Mr. Chairman, I really appreciate the opportunity to be with you today. And if you would like, I could start out with a little bit about my background, and we can go from there, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I am a 13-year, little over 13-year state employee. I began my career actually here in the Senate, and so it's really it's always a pleasure and a little bit surreal to be sitting at the table here to testify before this body. And I did spend 5 years working first for Senator Metzen and when he was chair of the Governmental Operations and Veterans Committee as the legislative assistant for that committee. In the last 3 years I spent here in the Senate, I worked for the late Senator Sam Solon as the Commerce Committee Administrator. And from the Senate, I went over to the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency in early 2002, and so I've been at the agency for a little over 8 years. And I started at the PCA as the legislative liaison, but I've worn a number of different hats over the years, from liaison to a manager position to assistant commissioner, deputy commissioner, and for the past a little over a year, I've been serving as the commissioner after former Commissioner Brad Moore moved on. So I have been at the agency for quite a number of years. And Mr. Chairman, I've had the opportunity to work with you over the last year, and I appreciate your willingness to call me in and ask for advice and to discuss issues. And on another note, it's nice, although Senator Saxog isn't here, I am a St. Olaf graduate, and something I share with the chairman and also Senator Saxog. And again, I appreciate the opportunity to be before you today. Mr. Chairman, I don't know what format you'd like to take. If you wanted me to provide some additional comments, or if you'd like to go to questions from committee members, I'd follow your lead.
Go ahead and make some introductory comments, and in fact, as many comments as you like about your role as commissioner and where you see the agency going in the future.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And maybe you could talk about your experience of the last year as well.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, it is an exciting time to be at the Pollution Control Agency. One of the opportunities that I had a couple of years ago, back in the 2006 and 7 time frame, and prior to that at a staff level, was working on what later became the Clean Water Legacy Act, and Senator Frederickson was the chief author of that legislation, and many of the members around this table played an integral role in that legislation passing, and some of the initial appropriations that led to really kickstarting a lot of the efforts that are associated with the Legacy Act implementation. And so one of the exciting things at the agency at the moment, and throughout, I think, state government and into the local units of government that deal with implementing water policy, is the implementation of the constitutional amendment dollars. And one of the things that we're very proud of, that we should be proud of in Minnesota, is that we truly are the envy of a lot of the other states throughout the country that do not have a framework for our water policy the way we do with the Clean Water Legacy Act. And over the last several years, we've been doing a lot of work in structuring our 10-year monitoring goals for the state's water resources, which was one of the important goals set forth in Chapter 114D in the Clean Water Legacy Act, in doing more water quality assessments so that we can actually start developing protection and restoration, or the TMDL, the total maximum daily load plans. And ultimately, what's, I think, important to all of us is actually seeing data and plans translated into action in the form of restoration practices in the case of problems that we're discovering, or also determining how we can best put protection measures out on the ground so that we can keep waters from becoming impaired in the first place. And so there's been a lot of great work that was begun with a couple of one-time appropriations in 2006 and 2007, and that was really picked up and funded on for the current two-year biennium through the passage of the constitutional amendment and the Clean Water Fund portion of the amendment dollars. We're also, Mr. Chairman, focusing on, and I know this is an issue that this committee has dealt with, how to improve really our environmental protection and restoration service delivery mechanisms. And by, you know, a lot of the success over the last 40 years is in environmental improvement has really resulted in good news and bad news. And the good news is we have made a tremendous amount of progress as a state and as a country in the quality of our natural resources. The bad news is that the problems, I think, that we face now and moving forward are more complex, and they require us to be more creative. And in that spirit, you know, one of the exercises that we're going through right now that is a high priority for me at the agency is really taking a look at all the tools that we have in our toolbox, from assistance and prevention activities, compliance and enforcement, permitting, all the different activities and programs that we deliver, really trying to put the environmental outcome at the forefront and figuring out how we can best deliver the outcomes that we're trying to achieve by aligning our efforts in a way that we can tackle those difficult problems that maybe don't respond to one particular approach, and seeing what we can do to make some really meaningful progress for the environment. The way I've framed it up at the agency over the last year since I've taken over, and Mr. Chairman, this gets to your point about how things have been going over the past year, is really trying to position the agency better for the future and trying to align those different efforts, the different talents and expertise of our staff, and really make sure that we're pointed at outcomes and figuring out creative ways to achieve those outcomes and the policies that this legislature has enacted over the years. And Mr. Chair, and just to give you an example of the type of effort that we're talking about, in the area of solid waste, we've seen a need to really just take a look at how we can continue to move the state forward on having a good integrated solid waste management framework and moving up the hierarchy, reduce, reuse, recycle, and obviously conservation. What we've done is brought together a good group of people within our agency with really different backgrounds, from a traditional solid waste background to individuals that come from the prevention and outreach side to specialists in composting and recycling, and really ask them to think creatively about how we can work with the counties around the state to really improve our ability to manage our resources, our solid waste resources, in a manner that minimizes the amount of landfilling and really the amount of waste we generate. So that's just an example of some of the things we're doing. As you all know, resources are tight, and we take very seriously our responsibility to demonstrate to you and to the public that the dollars that you invest are being spent wisely, and that we can communicate about what's being achieved with the scarce resources that you're providing. Mr. Chair, as over the last year, it's been I appreciate the opportunity to meet with all of you on the committee. As the chairman pointed out, we did have a schedule, a confirmation hearing schedule, and I believe you took up the bonding bill, which pushed all the committees on the schedule for the day off, and it didn't work out. But fortunately, I did have an opportunity to visit with each of you, and many of you have called with questions and issues that you wanted to talk about, and I certainly hope that we've been responsive, and I hope that you'd let me know if we haven't been. Mr. Chair, again, just I guess to bring it to conclusion on my remarks, I really appreciate the opportunity to be with this committee today and to have a dialogue, And I take very seriously the opportunity that our agency has to work with you, to help inform the debates that you have, to provide answers to your questions, and to be partners in moving the state forward. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to respond to any questions you or the committee may have.
What is the mission of the PCA?
Mr. Chairman, the PCA's mission is to work with Minnesotans to protect, conserve, and improve Minnesota's air, water, and land resources. So it's a very broad mission.
What do you see as your role in making sure that the mission remains energetic and vital?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would start out by saying, obviously, in government, it's a very challenging time for staff morale. And I think one of the things that, any commissioner should do is really to keep the lines of communication open with the staff and with the public about what we're doing and, what we're accomplishing. And, one of the ways that we, I think, need to keep the mission invigorated is to just refocus our efforts on really what the overall environmental outcomes are that really this, the legislature and governors over the years have established as our policies, and to take a fresh look at, maybe statutes that were 20 years old and the goals that are in there, and I go back to the solid waste example and say, well, we've done a lot. Minnesota is, widely considered to be a leader in the area of solid waste management, and our recycling rate is one of the tops in the nation. But how do we invigorate that discussion and figure out how we can continue to move forward? And part of that is, I think, Mr. Chairman, taking a look at the mission in light of all the different resources that the agency has to bring to bear on issues, such as, one tool doesn't, I'd rephrase it. One tool, for example, if we're talking about compliance or enforcement or permitting assistance, any one tool isn't better than another. It's how you use those tools. And so it's important to take a look at the problems you're trying to achieve and working backward and see where you have opportunities. And so part of reinvigorating the mission is that aspect of it, is looking at all the different ways that we can come at problems. And it's going to require, I think, to come at them from all kinds of different directions and see what works best. And actually, with that comes taking chances, because admittedly, when you're trying new strategies, some aren't going to work as well as others, and that's okay. You have to be willing to take risks, and sometimes you learn more from things that don't work than from actions that do. I think, Mr. Chairman, another thing that's really been critical over the last several years and will continue to be in invigorating the ability of the agency to work with Minnesotans to improve and protect and conserve our natural resources is really just that, the engagement of our citizens. The Legacy Act, again, to come back to that, was really thoughtful in laying out how important civic engagement is, meaning the average people that are impacted by, that care about our resources and are impacted by decisions that are made and how we manage our natural resources. And that's admittedly challenging, how you get citizens that maybe otherwise wouldn't be engaged in attending a meeting about a TMDL, a total maximum daily load plan, and trying to explain it in a way that keeps them coming back to other future meetings and engaging in that process. So I think that's really important in reinvigorating and keeping the mission at the forefront, is trying to continue to move ahead to acknowledge that the mission is critically important. It's very broad. It's very challenging, to be sure. But there are ways, Mr. Chairman, that I think we have so many tools at our disposal that it's important to take some chances and to take a look at how we can tackle our problems.
Will the PCA be proposing any, making any proposals this legislative session along those lines?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, our focus this year is on, really on the budget and the bonding in terms of proposals out of the agency. And really, my emphasis right now is on implementation of the resources that we have in-house and improving our service delivery in the near future. So in terms of new initiatives, Mr. Chairman, no, there are not new initiatives coming forward from a policy direction. Again, we want to make sure that the work we're doing extremely well, and that we're tackling the responsibilities we've been given in the most effective and efficient manner we can.
When do you anticipate new ideas to invigorate the mission will be proposed then?
Well, I think new ideas, Mr. Chairman, are always part of the discussion. I think in terms of having actual policy initiatives that would be submitted to the legislature for, you know, enactment into law is, you know, we do not have initiatives like that, but being part of, you know, ideas, both discussions here as well as with stakeholders and the citizens of Minnesota about how we can better accomplish our mission, that's the invigorating part for us as we move forward.
Tell me about your role with the Citizens Board. How has that been so far, and do you anticipate it being the same or different in the future?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the Pollution Control Agency is relatively unique among state agencies in that we do have a Citizens Board, and in statute, the agency is actually defined a couple of different ways. It's defined as the Citizens Board, and it's also defined in terms of being the staff carrying out the responsibilities through the commissioner. And as the commissioner does chair the Citizens Board. The Citizens Board has an important role to play in that it approves any rules that the agency promulgates based on the authority given to it by the legislature. And we also have any other issues of importance that either the commissioner or members of the Citizens Board bring forward. And most often that takes the form of permits, usually fairly controversial permits that the Citizens Board ultimately makes the final decision on. So any decision that the Citizens Board asks be brought to the board for that decision rather than having the commissioner make is brought to the board. And in terms of how, you know, my impression over the last year of chairing the Citizens Board has been very rewarding, Mr. Chairman. I think we've had a great dialogue on a number of very, you know, important issues for the state of Minnesota. We recently submitted, had the discussion at our Citizens Board, actually for 2 months, on the state's draft regional haze state implementation plan, which we recently submitted to EPA after a number of years of work on that effort. We also had, and I see Senator Stumpf here, and we saw each other at the Senator Marty hearing last week, week before, on Excel Dairy. And one of the issues that the board has really provided a venue for discussing just difficult matters that are before the agency. In that case, it's an enforcement matter that has been just a real challenge up in Senator Stumpf's area, and that we had, I think, between closed sessions on litigation strategy and open hearings on various issues, about 6 months of discussions at our board on that. And then in addition, Mr. Chair, as probably most of the members of the committee know, we have in Minnesota public comment periods for things like permits and environmental assessment worksheets. But in addition to that, the Citizens Board is another venue where we do take public testimony, much like you do here, and have a good dialogue about concerns and opportunities that different projects present before the board makes final decisions. So in terms of do I see it changing over the next year, I don't think so, Mr. Chairman. I think the Citizens Board at this point is doing a lot of good work in terms of having both information items and decision items, and providing yet another venue beside public information meetings on various projects to legislative hearings. It's another opportunity to get more perspectives out on the table.
Is there something in the law that prevented the PCA from acting quicker on the Excel Dairy issue?
Well, Mr. Chairman, we had a very good discussion in Senator Marty's committee, and you know, I'm as frustrated by that the length of time it's taking to resolve Excel Dairy and to address those problems that have been created for the people that live in that area as anybody. And I guess the short answer to your question is there's due process in administrative law in terms of when you take enforcement action. And in this particular case, we have not had a final decision rendered in Marshall County Court on action that was ordered in the fall of 2008. So I don't know the answer to your question. I think, Mr. Chairman, the you know, we're in the middle of still two, and we're in two venues in court with Excel Dairy, and we do have oral arguments pending in the Court of Appeals on one of those matters. So there will be certainly a time when this is resolved, and I'm committed to resolving it as soon as possible, that I think it'll be important to take a look at the ability to resolve enforcement matters. And certainly there are issues for this body, the legislature, to consider in terms of if you speed up or cut out certain aspects of judicial review, what does that mean for having due process? And unfortunately, sometimes you prevail with your arguments in court and sometimes you don't. And in this case, we're in a little bit of limbo because the court had interim orders, but we haven't received a final order. In terms of an update on Excel Dairy, Mr. Chairman, what the Citizens Board adopted in April of 2009 was they were in the middle of a five-year permit term. And there were a couple of options that the agency and the Citizens Board had. One was to begin the revocation process of the existing permit, and the other option would be to do a revocation of their existing permit and a reissuance of a one-year limited-term permit with very specific conditions in terms of what environmental work they had to do, when it had to be completed. The staff recommendation to the board and what the board ultimately decided to adopt was the revocation and the reissuance option. And, you know, I think there are reasonable opinions on either side whether it would have been preferable to start revocation and have the legal battle over that, or whether the path that the Citizens Board chose was the wisest. And I get, from my perspective, Mr. Chairman, the important thing to me was, given that we were in litigation already and that it was still unresolved, that the latter option, where we had a one-year permit term with specific conditions, that seemed to me to be the quickest path forward. And it allowed us to have, I think, some more specific language that we used in subsequent administrative orders requiring certain actions that, frankly, the facility didn't accomplish in the manner that we prescribed it. And also it set up for the meeting that we have in March at the Citizens Board, which we recently issued a public notice, a fact sheet, denying the reissuance of another permit. So I think it's a long answer to your question, Mr. Chairman. It's a complicated issue, and I think for me, it's difficult to say if there are changes in law that would lead to the ability to better resolve situations like this in the future, given that, you know, we felt that we had a pretty strong argument in Marshall County Court back when we did, and unfortunately, again, sometimes you prevail with arguments, and sometimes you don't prevail. And in this case, you know, we certainly wished the court would have acted sooner and acted in the manner that we asked them to act.
Senator Dill, then Saxog.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Egger, I have a constituent named Ted Reichman. He's not actually my constituent, but they have a dairy farm about 7 miles from my farm. And then they also have some heifer-raising facilities and other livestock facilities in west central Minnesota. Ted Reichman was a past chairman of the Minnesota Cattlemen's Association, and he contacted me last week about an issue that he thought had been resolved. several years ago when we had a meeting on his farm in West Central Minnesota. The meeting was attended by Myrna Hulbeck, I think that's her name.
Yes, it is.
And Wayne Anderson from your agency, and then Senator Dean Johnson and some other legislators, myself, were there. There were county commissioners and the county feedlot officer were present. And what the practice out there was to fence in a large area of cropland and to feed cattle on that cropland during the wintertime, and then in the spring it would be used for crop production again. And there was a number of compromises that were made during that meeting, like fencing off grass waterways, limiting the number of animals at the site, and everything seemed to be A-OK at that time, and he's been operating under that agreement since then without thinking he was doing something wrong. And as I understand it, some of your agency people have gone out there now and decided that agreement is not in force, or that you can't continue to operate under what we agreed to at that time. Are you familiar with that case at all?
Mr. Chairman, I was wearing a different hat back in the around the time frame that you're talking about, the meeting that originally occurred on the winter feeding issue, but I'm not familiar with the situation you're talking about with Mr. Reichman. I'd be happy to look into it. I haven't received any calls or communication on that, but I'd be happy to look into it, Senator Dill, Mr.
Okay.
Chairman, and provide you with the status of what's happening.
Okay, that's my first question. So I've got a second one here, and that has to do with these animal feeding facilities that are over 1,000 animal units. Do you think it's still necessary to get a federal permit, an NPDES permit for these facilities, which is for water discharge? And since these newer feedlots are designed to, if they're properly engineered and managed, they're designed to have zero discharge, at this point in time, is it really necessary for them to go ahead and get this federal permit?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dill, I've heard that concern. What I haven't heard is what the benefit of moving away from the system that we've had in terms of the NPDES permits and you know, what's to be gained by that? What are the pros and cons of it? And one of the concerns that I just had recently, the chairman asked about Excel Dairy, and, you know, I'd be concerned if, you know, in particular we've had difficulty bringing that facility into compliance, and they do have an NPDES permit, and they're a total confinement, and I don't think depending on what the language would look like, Mr. Chairman, Senator Dill, you know, if a facility like that would not require a permit, I don't know that at this point if that's a very good idea.
Okay. And my third question, my last one is, I've heard some rumblings about trying to consolidate environmental organizations or parts of state government that deal with environmental issues into a single agency. And they're talking about the DNR, your agency, and maybe Bowser. What would be your view of something like that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dill, I think it depends on what the outcome what is the outcome you want to define for that action. I think simply putting agencies together without examining the underlying policies that you're concerned about aligning, that's not going to accomplish it. I think you need to have a thoughtful discussion, which I think is what this committee has been working on over the last couple of months, to really identify how best to deliver the services that the citizens of Minnesota expect, and then determining which are duplicative, what is the best way to deliver those services. I think in terms of my experience at the PCA, Mr. Chairman, there are certainly areas where there are a lot of agencies, as you all know, involved in delivering water services, protection, restoration, in state government and in local and by local units of government. But there are underlying policies for that. The agencies didn't one day decide that it would make sense to have the Department of Health, PCA, DNR, Met Council, and Department of Agriculture all involved in various ways with groundwater protection and restoration. So I think, Mr. Chairman, the answer to your question is it depends on what outcome you're seeking. If it's to streamline the number of high-level positions in commissioners' offices, then obviously this would do the trick. I think what you're looking at and what you've been discussing is more about service delivery, and I think that requires a real thoughtful deliberation about, you know, what is the best way to deliver the environmental services that the different agencies are charged with, and where there's overlap, I think it's important for you to determine, does it make sense to have that overlap, or is it overlap for the sake of overlap, in which case that it could be addressed through the consolidation. So I think it's a very it sounds like a simple question, but with a complex answer. I think it requires a lot of thoughtful deliberation on the part of the committee and the legislature. And the chairman has talked to, I know, Commissioner Holston and I about our thoughts, and we share with them similar thoughts, which is be happy to be part of the discussion and to help explain what it is that we do and help you work through whether it makes sense to do either some kind of reorganization at a large scale, or if there are some things that we can do to align without that large of a move. And Mr. Chairman, just to add on to that, you know, one of the things that we do take very seriously is coordination among state agencies. And I know that often it doesn't appear that way, but we do spend a considerable amount of time talking about, in particular, the water area, where we have a lot of different agencies involved, and you know, we do come up with coordinated budget proposals and work plans on Clean Water Legacy Act activities, and so we do try to align our resources and our efforts. But there are underlying policies that I think that would need to be, you know, you'd want to take a look at when you're deciding if consolidation really makes a lot of sense.
Senator Saxog.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Ager, this question is very similar to Senator Dill's. It deals with permitting, not the rigor, which, you know, I have no intention of talking about, but the time frame, you know, that we go through, particularly when we're talking about water permitting. You mentioned air permitting. Your ability to work with the federal land managers has been, I think, a real plus. So, you know that's I put that on the plus side. As you just got done discussing, though, our process in water permitting and how that can hold up. Well, let's put it this way. I think people should be able to get a decision, whether it's up or down, quicker than we give them, because, you know, I think it involves money and time. You said that the MPCA, the DNR, Bowser, Ag, Health, try to coordinate the best they can, particularly, say, in water permitting, which they all have a piece in. Is there some type of coordination committee or possibility of a committee or formal committee that does that? And if not, is that would rather than streamline and put all our departments together? I mean, is there something specifically we can do, particularly with water, on a formal basis?
And to just within that answer, talk about your role on the Environmental Quality Board, which gathers all of the agency heads.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Saxog, you know, my comments about coordination were more general, but, you know, specifically, I think more often on water permits, you see the DNR, in particular, DNR's water appropriations permits, for example, that often interact with a project that the PCA would be reviewing and permitting, doing permitting for on the discharging of water. So there's it's more ad hoc, Mr. Chairman, Senator Saxog, and our coordination in terms of on the permitting. But make no mistake, you know, we take very seriously, you know, there are a number of different permitting actions and permitting authorities, and that's not even to mention any local conditional use permits that might be required by the local units of government. So on a permit-by-permit basis, there's that coordination. And, Mr. Chairman, you make a good point. There are other ways that we coordinate on a more formal basis, and those would be sitting on the, you know, I sit on the Environmental Quality Board with a number of the other commissioners, including DNR and the Bowser executive, or a representative from Bowser, which is the board chair, MnDOT, citizen members. There's also the Board of Water and Soil Resources, and on the actual board, by statute, are representatives from all the state agencies, and that's a role that is filled, in our case and in DNR's case, by assistant commissioners that represent the agencies on the Board of Water and Soil Resources Board. And you also have the Public Facilities Authority, which has a board that different agencies, ours included, sit on, and that, you know, we have an important relationship with the Public Facilities Authority in the area of wastewater treatment. We do the environmental work, the plans and specifications review, and the permitting, and they obviously provide the resources, the financial resources to make projects happen. So there are different venues, Mr. Chairman, that exist that the agencies sit on at a high level, and those are just a few of the examples.
Is the PCA thinking about or examining, or will it be proposing any new ways to better consolidate at least water permitting?
Well,
this has been a recurring theme in our reform hearings.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it's a recurring theme that I hear as well. And I think probably every PCA commissioner over the last several years has heard the same, which is why in around the 2003 timeframe under former Commissioner Corrigan, we did implement a number of process improvements to map out the permitting process and look for areas where we could realize some efficiencies while maintaining the important environmental benefits to that really is why we do permitting. And, you know, we've made a lot of progress over the last several years in reducing the permit issuance times. But in terms of where to go next, I think we provided a report at the legislature's request on environmental review, streamlining options. We're continuing to look at those options and anticipate that the legislature is going to want to have a discussion about how we can have not only efficient permitting, Mr. Chairman, but also effective, that we're really focusing on delivering the environmental benefit and doing it as expeditiously as possible, and you know, ensuring that the public has adequate opportunity to review and comment, but really focusing on how we can do it both efficiently and more effectively. So there are some ideas that we're taking a look at, Mr. Chairman, and look forward to being part of the discussion this session. I know that there's a lot of interest in this. I get the question from members of both the House and the Senate and from both parties about how can we do this more efficiently. And Senator Saxhagen, you said, and I remember meeting with Senator Vickerman last year, and he put it very succinctly, you know, whether the answer is yes or no, people would like to know the answer. And I think that's what we want to work towards, is having a process where it's open, it's transparent, it's effective in terms of the protections that we put in place for the environment, but it's also as efficient as we can be, so that there is some certainty in the process, that you get to an answer eventually, whether it's that yes, no, or you need to modify it.
Senator Stump.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This committee had a hearing up in Bemidji, and one of the issues that came up was presented by the Minnesota Association of Counties, and even before that hearing, we heard a lot. I heard a lot, and my colleagues heard a lot from local county environmental officers about the rules regarding the 70-80 system. And I believe it was Mr. Vini that presented in behalf of the county. And he talks about the regulations or the rules that are going to supposedly take place. And I believe that very few counties are actually behind them. And so I'm worried that the agency and the counties are kind of, they should be partners, or basically have already gotten a divorce. And just to give you a sense of what he's saying, because you weren't up there at the time, Commissioner, this is one of the new rules, one of the new recommend requirements, that is all the septic systems in sandy soils must be pressurized. Such a rule is not supported by science. It will likely result in frozen, failing systems up north and will add significant costs to development in rural Minnesota. during a time when the economy needs new construction and may add another unfunded mandate to counties to manage and inspect. And what I'm, my question is, what effort are you doing to try to sit down with the counties and work this out? As the local county commissioners and the county environmental officers are saying, you know, they'd rather lose some money than put in a system that's not applicable to a region of the state.
Regarding new septic rules, Commissioner Egger.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stumpf, we are absolutely aware of the concerns in the counties, and we have sat down with AMC in particular recently. And just to give the committee a little context, the reason you all are hearing so much about this, those of you that are, is there's a provision in statute that says within 2 years of the septic, the 70-80 rules, which are are the septic system rules, becoming final, being finalized, that the counties have to do an updating of their ordinances. And so if the ordinances aren't updated within that two-year time frame, there's a holdback of not only the funds that counties receive for their septic system programs, which is not much. I think it's the state provides around $10,000 per county, but also the natural resources block grant dollars, because this is a statutory provision. So, Mr. Chairman, Senator Stumpf, to your point, you know, we're hearing the concerns, and we're certainly sensitive to the economic situation, and you know, we'd certainly be amenable to working with the counties and the legislature to extend that timeline to provide some additional time to talk about how we can create a path forward where we're having the ordinances. I mean, the reason we revised the rules is to bring them up to date and to bring us up to date with the most current science and requirements. And admittedly, that's going to cause some challenges at the local level, particularly at this point in time. And so if the legislature is interested in working with the agency and AMC to extend that timeline, we'd certainly be willing to do that. But it is a statutory timeline. It's not something we can do administratively, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Dibble?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner. Could we just spend a minute hearing from you a little bit about climate change, global warming, greenhouse gas emissions? I'm curious to know what your view of the subject is. Is it real? Is it man-made? et cetera. And also, depending on that answer, what actions, if any, the PCA feels like it has some responsibility for, policies to promote or carry out, any responses to the governor's climate change action group that came forward with a list of important actions to take, some of which I think the PCA has a role in. And, if I could add to that, any involvement you have at the federal level on this subject.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dibble, climate change is real. Climate change is important. And humans contribute to climate change. I absolutely believe that. I think the science, in my mind, is settled on that matter. It's an important issue that obviously, Minnesota needs to think about how we respond in terms of policies and really on planning for any impacts, environmental impacts and societal impacts associated with climate change. So, Senator Dibble, I hope that's a clear answer. I absolutely think it's an issue and it's an important one, and that we all contribute our share to the overall problem. In terms of Mr. Chairman, the actions, you know, I followed closely the coverage of Copenhagen and the discussions that have been going on in Washington. And I think that it's important that we have some kind of international and a national framework for how all the states are going to implement, you know, really meaningful policies to start to make progress towards reducing our impact on climate change. In terms of our role, one of our important roles is, you know, we're fortunate at our agency to have Assistant Commissioner David Thornton that is, you know, really, I think, viewed as one of the leading experts. He's in the audience today, so I hope I don't embarrass him, on climate change and on someone who brings to the table extensive experience working with other states on ensuring that we're all moving in a similar direction. I guess that brings me to what I think is really important. There are things that I think we should be looking at and implementing that are appropriate at the state level that can really move us forward. And I think, you know, one of the things that came out of Copenhagen is that sometimes it's important, you know, I think I was disappointed that there wasn't a binding agreement coming out of Copenhagen, but one of the things that it showed is that ultimately you may get a better deal by ensuring that you address all the major issues on the table, from the developing countries side to how to bring along the developed countries' perspective and those unique issues, and how also you deal with the developing countries and bringing them along. And so I think, you know, I'm hopeful that in the near future we have Congress that is going to, you know, provide some kind of framework that we can all start thinking about individually as states, but that they set the ground rules on and what it is we're trying. In the meantime, one of the things, you know, circling back to the chairman's question about what are the things that I've been focusing on over the last year, you know, one of the important aspects coming out of the Climate Change Advisory Group was this target that was given in the area of solid waste management of how much greenhouse gases are attributable and what's a reasonable amount we could reduce. And that's one reason we established this internal group that's going to be really focused over the next year and a half to 2 years on working on the ground with individual counties and other entities to see what we can accomplish over the next couple of years, and, you know, for a couple of reasons. One is because it's important to manage our waste in the best way we can and move up the hierarchy, but the second was that we have an important goal in the Climate Change Advisory Group recommendations, and this is one way that we can, within our control, start moving in that direction. So, and I think another, although Mr. Chairman, Senator Dibble, a smaller item, but I think it's important that we model the way in government, and in particular that we model the way in terms of that it's possible to make changes in how you manage your organization that, you know, for example, energy efficiency can have a tremendous benefit to reducing greenhouse gases and ultimately saves you money. And so we're trying to pilot ways where we can do those things because they're the right things to do and people expect government to do it, but also to model the behavior, to model the way to figure out how we can quantify, both from an environmental perspective as well as from an economic perspective, the benefit to taking those types of actions. So, Mr. Chairman, I hope that covers a lot of the issues you're requesting information on.
Great. Thanks. Just two quick follow-up questions. First is your counterpart at agriculture, Commissioner Hugesson, has taken it upon himself to lead an effort to kill any changes at the federal level, congressional legislation. He's working with other commissioners from other states to accomplish that. I think in direct contrast to established state policy. So I want to be sure you're not doing something similar in your leadership capacity with your counterparts in other states to kill congressional efforts to create this framework that you cited in your comments.
No, Mr. Chair, I'm not. I think it's important that the states work together and that, you know, we all bring a lot of unique experiences to the table. We all, I don't think anybody, if we want meaningful progress on these issues that cross state boundaries, I mean, I think to ultimately have success, you have to have the states and the federal government working together. And so I think it's important that that the states do that and that we are able to influence, I guess, what ultimately happens on national level.
And then finally, Commissioner Dew, you know, we've had a lot of discussion at the federal level about whether or not the EPA has the authority to regulate on greenhouse gases. I think that's now established through Supreme Court decision and now direction coming out of the administration at the federal level. Do you feel like you have similar authority at the state level?
Mr. Chairman, that's a good question. One that I guess I would ask the Attorney General's office at some point to help clarify for me. But I guess to answer it a different way, it's inevitable that we're going to have greenhouse gas regulation. I think the best thing we can do is to prepare for it. And EPA has already done a number of things in the last year to 13 months that have moved in that direction. And so whether we have the authority, you know, it's a legal question, I think. Ultimately, it's going to happen in the very near future.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So in the meantime, what can or what will the PCA be doing to address climate change here in Minnesota?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think you know, one thing to point out is there are a couple of different entities that have a role in climate change. We obviously have the Office of Energy Security in the state that's associated with the Department of Commerce. We have the MPCA, and we also have, you know, all of the environmental, getting back to Senator Saxog's point of coordination, all of the different environmental organizations, you know, including the Minnesota Department of Transportation, that are looking at climate change adaptation strategies, because there are a couple of responsibilities. I mean, it's one thing to talk about what we can do to prevent climate change from occurring, but it's also prudent that we spend time thinking about how to mitigate impacts when it, if and when it does. And so, you know, one of the roles that the MPCA has, and it's a role shared with other agencies, is to really start examining the potential impacts of climate change on our resources, land, water, on our air quality, and determine, you know, what are things that we should start thinking about now to mitigate any potential impacts that we will see in the future. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Another thing that you know, we continue to do is to look for opportunities where we can quantify greenhouse gas emissions for any actions that we take. And solid waste is an example that I used earlier. But, you know, energy efficiency, there are a tremendous number of the federal stimulus, the ERA dollars that were directed to states to stimulate growth in the economy, and one of the areas of focus was on energy efficiency. And so there's some great opportunities in that area as well, Mr. Chairman. And I guess looking for our opportunities to be creative, to quantify the actions that we're taking in terms of their environmental benefit, and thinking a little bit differently about environmental benefit. And perhaps it's not limited to solely the traditional metrics, but, you know, whenever possible, think about, you know, when we reduce the amount of waste we generate as an organization, how does that translate into dollars saved on supplies, to how much greenhouse gases are conserved by or reduced by not utilizing as much as many resources as we otherwise could. So I think it's, again, Mr. Chair, it's trying to model the way. It's looking for opportunities to move the ball forward, understanding that there are a lot of important policy decisions that are going to be made probably in the very near future that will impact Minnesota and all the other states related to this, and being prepared to carry that out.
Senator Kielash.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Enger, one of the things that I spent Thursday evening at the Chamber of Commerce listening, as many of us did, listening to the complaints from the business community about the timeline for getting permitting, the amount of forms, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm just curious, is there a directive from the governor's office to all the agencies, water agencies, to coordinate paperwork, to coordinate timelines on this permitting process? Because I know that, you know, you've got your commissioner and there's other commissioners here. Each one of you have your own little silo about things to do, and I know that makes it difficult because you're on equal footing. I'm just wondering if the administration has helped. And the next question is there any effort to try to consolidate that and not duplicate even the studies, so that if one agency is doing a study on the water, is there another one following it up with a same or similar study that duplicates half or three-quarters of it but has a little different twist on it?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, in terms of your first question about a formal directive, no. The expectation is there that we'll coordinate our work, but a formal directive, there's not an executive order, something of that nature. In terms of the duplication issue, you know, one of the areas that I think has a lot of potential that we've looked at, that we included in our environmental review streamlining options report, again, that laid out options for the legislature to consider, is there a way to reduce the amount of duplication through environmental review and permitting? And I would also, I think, add the issue you just raised. Within permitting, you may have a discharge permit from the PCA. You may also need a water appropriations permit from the DNR, and synchronizing that work. But, I think there are opportunities where you can achieve some efficiency but not sacrifice the protections for the environment, which, again, that's something I hear as well. Can you do it quicker? Can you get us to an answer in a more expeditious manner? But we want to continue to protect, maintain, improve our protections for the environment, which is what I want as well. And so, I think, Mr. Chairman, the issue you raise is a good one on looking at duplication. It's something that we're looking at in determining, you know, what opportunities there are to have that dialogue and that discussion moving forward, and to see what makes the best sense for protecting the resource, but having that expectation that we can move through permitting and environmental review in as efficient manner as possible.
Senator Steven.
I'm sorry, I had one follow-up. Mr. Chair, Mr. Enger, so I think by your statement is the agencies are looking for leadership out of the legislature in order to direct you into doing these streamlining processes, permitting studies, to make that happen quicker?
Mr. Chairman, I would say it differently. I would say a point of emphasis, particularly at our agency over the last several years, is to streamline those processes to the degree we can. And I think there are still, you know, administratively some things that we can do to further improve upon that and to work closely with other agencies. I would say it differently, and I think maybe this is partially due to my background coming from a staff position here, and having a great deal of respect for the legislative branches. Instead of directing, I would say I would hope that we could have a dialogue together about what the outcomes we're seeking are, because I think they're the same ones. I think it's certainty in the process, an efficient yet environmentally protective permitting environmental review process, and have the discussion together. And we certainly, in the agencies, bring forward expertise in those areas and can answer questions. But I think it's something that we could approach together and to have a good dialogue about what makes sense.
Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, as you probably know, the one hazardous waste incinerator in the state is located in southern Washington County. And there has been proposals to by industry to expand the use of that facility. And my question to you, and I should also add, there are, you know, really significant concerns on behalf of the community by the city council and by citizens of the area over that expanded use. And so my question to you is, would you be willing to come to the community, to Cottage Grove, meet with the city council and other interested members of the public who have these concerns? Because, as you probably know, the permit is up for reissuance soon.
Sure.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Sieben, I would, but I would suggest that we might have another opportunity that may provide a better venue for that. And I, you know, my understanding in checking in with the staff was that, you know, we would anticipate to have public permits on public notice this spring. And in addition, we had a discussion with the Citizens Board earlier. This is a permit that I would expect to bring to the Citizens Board, and I'd commit to do that. And that's also an opportunity to have additional public testimony for the entire board. So I would certainly be willing to be part of a meeting, but there's also, I think, an opportunity for the concerns to be brought to the Citizens Board as well and to take that public testimony.
And Commissioner Egger, thank you for that response. The people in the community do plan to use the Citizens Board as well, but my question is, would you be willing to meet with the people in the community to talk and hear their concerns?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Sieben, yes.
Thank you.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chair, my question was answered a long time ago.
Senator Frederickson.
Mr. Chairman, I was going to raise a question and a comment about speedily issuing permits and making decisions, but I think that's been adequately covered already. It's an issue in my district also. And I'd have a question. Are there other members asked other questions? Are you ready for a motion?
Yeah, go ahead.
You ready
I
for
had
a motion?
A couple more questions myself, but if you...
I'll make the motion if you're ready.
Why don't we... I'll defer to you on the motion, but let me just ask a couple more questions.
Sure.
If we could. On the fee... on the fees, the permit fees, what is your view on the proposer-based fee structure?
Mr. Chairman, the legislature gave us direction over the last couple of years to continue aligning permit fees with the costs of performing those activities. And so, you know, that is the policy that was set forward, and we're moving ahead with implementation on that. I think the challenge is, as probably you all are aware, is how fast do you get to that complete alignment? And one of the, I'll just leave it at that. One of the challenges is it's a significant cost, and you're going to hear from businesses and regulated parties in your district that it's a burden over the next couple of years, but it is the policy that was laid out, and we're doing our best to implement that. And it wasn't a hard deadline, Mr. Chairman. And it was in Senator Anderson and Representative Guinness's finance bill to continue that effort at alignment. And so it's something, obviously, when we come forward with biennial budgets, we'll be reporting on the progress that we make in aligning those fees with paying for the costs of the services that we provide.
Now that the Clean Water Council has been taking a larger role in the Clean Water Fund passed within the legacy amendment, do you think that the Clean Water Council should broaden its membership in any way?
Mr. Chairman, did you have anyone or any group in mind that you didn't think was represented?
Legislators?
Mr. Chairman, that's certainly the prerogative of the legislature to add members to any council. I certainly wouldn't oppose it. Ultimately, the recommendations that are provided both to the agencies involved as well as to you, you get to make the final decisions on funding and priorities. But, that's the will of the legislature, Mr. Chairman. I don't have strong feelings one way or another.
On the Clean Water Legacy, do you see the state of Minnesota moving beyond mere assessments and getting more assertive with actual cleanup and protection, not only within the Clean Water Legacy Act, but in our funding mechanisms?
Mr. Chairman,
and
on
if
the-
so, what form?
Mr. Chairman, on the point of are we going to get more, I think your term was aggressive in terms of protection and restoration. I absolutely do. That is the direction that we're going. One of the things that has been accelerated over the last few years, both with the constitutional amendment passing, but even predating that to the Clean Water Legacy Act passage, is that it by providing some additional resources and appropriately high expectations for those resources, it led to us accelerating how we approached assessment and monitoring, meaning instead of a stream-by-stream, lake-by-lake approach, we're now transitioning to the watershed-based approach, which in terms of protection and restoration is, I think, much better for the environment because you're assessing all of the water resource impacts in a particular watershed and figuring out what are the appropriate restoration measures for where you see problems? But also, at that point, you can say, okay, well, the water resources are in pretty good shape. They're not impaired. What can we do to preserve that status so that we can get ahead of the curve and not wait until something is degraded or impaired before we take meaningful action? In terms of, Mr. Chairman, funding sources, I guess, I hadn't thought of that. Before the constitutional amendment, the legislature had appropriated three consecutive years, 2006 session, and then in the 2007 session for fiscal years 08 and 09, one-time appropriations for Clean Water Legacy Act implementation. And then the constitutional amendment, the recommendations that came forward last year and that the legislature authorized were from the new Clean Water Fund. And so in terms of any other funding sources for those activities, I can't think of one, a new one off the top of my head, Mr. Chairman.
In your time at the PCA, knowing that there's no silver bullet, what has in your mind become your favorite technique for protecting water?
For protecting the water? Well, Mr. Chairman, that's a great question. You know, one of the things that I found very exciting, and I hope the legislature really does take a lot of pride in the fact that the Clean Water Legacy Act, although it's fairly brief, it's very elegant in the way it lays out all the different responsibilities for the state agencies and ultimately the policies that should dictate our actions, from identifying waters that are impaired through ultimately the cleanup responsibilities. And so one of the things that I think is exciting in terms of protecting our water resources is that maturation process from the initial discussions that occurred in the early 2000s about how does Minnesota want to deliver on this and structure their response to this federal Clean Water Act mandate, to really shaping a system that is the envy of most of the other states in the country and that really has a methodical, logical way that we assess our resources. And I think this is the innovative part, Mr. Chairman, that we figure out how to move beyond simply the putting something out on public comment period approach to really engaging of citizens, the civic engagement aspect to get people to understand the importance of their water resources and what the impacts are and what they can do to be part of designing the solutions for the future. So I think that's one of the real innovative things about Minnesota that we should be very proud of, and I think it's really moving the ball forward.
I was thinking about maybe a biological technique, but when you mentioned the social technique, that probably makes the most sense.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm a poli-sci. I have a poli-sci background from St. Olaf College, so I tend to think in terms of that side of the equation, which is why I'm glad we have a lot of good scientists that I can rely on for the technical data.
How will the PCA be approaching ethanol plants and permits in the future?
Well, Mr. Chairman, thank you for that question. I think, one of the issues that you have probably been hearing about, and if you haven't been hearing about from the plants in your area and the neighbors in your area, that you've probably seen in the paper, a number of significant penalties associated that have been levied by the PCA on many of the ethanol plants in the state. And, that is certainly a concern to us, and I can tell you it's of concern to the industry when you talk about the size of the penalties that we've had in a number of different cases. And so to respond to your question, this is another area where we're trying to be creative, and there's nothing we can do about current ongoing enforcement and enforcement that we've recently taken, but what we can do is figure out how we can prevent any future rounds of enforcement to the extent we can from happening. And one way that we've done that is we have freed up some people from our assistance side of the organization to be available to the ethanol industry to work through any issues in understanding the permit requirements and any challenges they see to compliance at the front end, and hopefully try to prevent us from being in a situation where we have non-compliance that we have to confront. As a regulatory agency, it's an absolute necessary part of the job, and it's important to having a level playing field and ensure the permits are more than just pieces of paper, that they're meaningful and protective of the environment. But when you get to the point of having to focus solely on enforcement, then you need to rethink your strategies. And so I think we need to bring some different we need to come at the issues a little bit differently, and to provide some resources ahead of when we get into a situation of enforcement. And I know that our industry wants to comply with their permits and wants to and are you know valuable parts of the economy, and we want to make sure that they're successful in that endeavor, because they're important to the economy, and they're also, you know, when they're in compliance with the regulations and with the permits, it's good for the environment.
Last question for me. It's on the social aspect again. The PCA used to put on the Living Green Expo, and it's my understanding it no longer is going to do that. What was the decision that led to that, and what can we do now? It was one of the most popular environmental events, period, in the state of Minnesota, and we fear for its future.
Mr. Chairman, yes, the Living Green Expo was very successful, and the decision that was made to discontinue our leadership of it had nothing to do with the success of it. I think by any measure, it was a very popular event. I think this is one of the issues, Mr. Chairman, that in times when you're looking to tap all available resources, with, and particularly people with really unique expertise in being able to conduct outreach and assistance in education, that I thought we could better utilize some of the folks that spent their time on planning the event. And Mr. Chairman, it was a significant amount of staff resources that went into a year-round planning of that event and moving it forward. So the event was successful. It has been a great event for the state of Minnesota. I made a judgment call that we could be utilizing the people that were working on that better, and you see some of them working on the integrated solid waste management effort that I mentioned earlier, and the expertise is being deployed in specific areas that, you know, we hope that we can accomplish a lot of good work for the environment. The positive side of the story, Mr. Chairman, is that it appears that our friends at the Minnesota Environmental Partnership, led by Steve Morris, are going to be picking up the leadership of the event, and that it will continue, which I think actually is a success story ultimately, even though it was a little balky on how we got to this point. I think that shows that the event will continue, and it will continue under great leadership, and I think that's a very positive development.
If that's the case, has the department freely relinquished its intellectual rights to the Living Green Expo so that it can be conducted by someone else?
Mr. Chair, yes, they'll be able to use that name.
Any other questions from the committee? If not, Senator Fredrickson moves that the Committee on Environment and Natural Resources makes a recommendation to the Senate to confirm Commissioner Paul Egger as Commissioner of the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Discussion. Commissioner, I appreciate your patience and in coming to the table for one, and then answering all of our questions. I think it's a rare opportunity for this committee, and I'm glad we took it. Further discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I appreciate it.
Good.
Next on the agenda is confirmation of Nancy Gibson, Citizen Member, Legislative Citizen Commission on Minnesota Resources. Thank you, Ms. Gibson, for your patience. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself.
Hi. My name is Nancy Gibson. I live in St. Louis Park, and I am here today to ask for your confirmation for my second term on LCCMR. I have worked in natural resources for close to 30 years, and that encompasses most of the time I've lived here in Minnesota. I have studied predator-prey relationships. I've written two books. I have traveled the state and around the world actually studying natural resources. And I feel quite honored to be involved with the Environmental Trust Fund. I actually helped with the campaign to reauthorize it in 1998. So I have traveled the state, and I hope that you will confirm me today so that I can continue. I was elected chair last fall, so I'm open for questions and hope to get your support.
Senator Vickerman?
Mr. Chair, when it comes time to make the motion to approve this reappointment, I'd like to do that. This simple reason. I work with Nancy, she's a co-chair, Senator Frederick and myself are co-chairs of this committee. You also serve on there, Senator Chaudhry. I think we've been more than fair. We've come from southern Minnesota, northern Minnesota, east or west. We've been trying to do that. And Nancy, you've just been excellent to work with. I've had to turn it over to you sometimes. I couldn't make it. Some troubles. You do a good job?
Thank you.
If you didn't do a good job, maybe the first one to let you know that you didn't do a good job. So when the time comes, Mr. Chair, I would like to move that.
Very good. Ms. Gibson, what are your views on the, and now that you serve in a leadership role capacity on the commission, what are your views on the direction of the commission in future years?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you. I'd like to thank Senator Vickerman for his comments. And I just want to, I am co-chair. There are three of us, and it's been a wonderful experience. My views for the future, I think it's very important that we adhere to the mission, and I think that is the driving force behind it. I also think that we need to serve all parts of the state, and I think there are parts of the state that are underserved by our natural resources, and I think we need to make sure that we do serve those parts. I also think there has been incredible opportunity to work with the legacy amendment, and I hope that we can complement each other on all the from the parks to the water to the Outdoor Heritage Council. I think we can all work together and make this a wonderful investment for the state and our taxpayers.
Senator Dibble and Saxon.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and I know we don't second motions in committee, but Ms. Gibson lives a stone's throw from my district, and I'm certainly very familiar with her work, both in this leadership capacity as well as a number of other leadership capacities that she provides on behalf of the environment and our natural resources. So I'll provide a symbolic second to Senator Vickerman's
I hope
motion.
That stone was not gotten from a granite outcrop.
A little too far south.
Senator Saxog.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Gibson, interested, you just were talking about parts of the state are underserved.
Mm-hmm.
Could you elaborate a little bit on that?
Ms. Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Saxog. Yes, we had a discussion the last commission meetings about there are areas of the state that don't have some parks. They don't have regional parks. They also need a little more protection on some of their water issues. And there have been some demands. Mr. Chair just recommended the outcrop, granite outcrop. That was an area that we had never been to before. We all got very enamored by it. So that was an area that I think really needed some protection, and I'm happy to say that we gave it full protection this year.
Senator, follow-up?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Gibson, is there any, I realize this has nothing to do with you or even Senator Vickerman, but is any thought of having a little more representation from the northern half of the state or at least the northeastern part of the state?
Thank you, Mr.
Gibson.
Chair and Senator Saxog. That's not my job.
Understood.
And I would agree it would always be good to represent the entire state, and perhaps that is something you can – you have one – the Senate is allowed to appoint one, the House, and then the governor. So that's an opportunity for the Senate, I would say.
Senator Kielash.
Yes, Ms. Gibson. I'm curious about your attitude about natural resources in the metro area, or I should say metro areas, because there's also Duluth and Rochester, larger communities, and what the commissioner is looking at or how they're looking at those.
Okay.
Ms. Gibson.
Thank you. Yes, Mr. Chair and Senator Kielash.
Kielash,
thank you. I live in the metro area, and I spend just about every day going around the lakes. I walk them, I ski them, I really enjoy them, and have to say that I had a mink in my yard this year, and I've had eagles in my yard in St. Louis Park, just a stone's throw from you. And so I really appreciate the benefit that some of the metro regions have. I also know that wildlife is becoming more adaptable to the presence of humans. So, but there are metro areas that really do serve the wildlife community. We are on a very important migratory route coming down the Mississippi River. I think that's very important that we play a large role. I was very happy to see the progress we made on turning the lights off in some of the metro areas so that birds could migrate. That really did have an effect. So those are the sort of things that I think we can do in the metro area. As a habitat person, the more habitat we can have in the metro area and around the state, I think will serve our wildlife the best.
Can I just follow up?
Yes.
And one of the concerns I have is the metro area is consistently expanding, and even though we're in slow times right now, but preserving those things that are unique in many ways and would otherwise be used for housing projects. And have any of those areas been identified as jewels?
Gibson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator. Yes, there are a lot of jewels, and I think one of the things that the LCCMR has done very well is funded the County Biological Survey, and they have been able to identify these jewels. And I think it's our utmost, we should really challenge, get those jewels under protection. These are one-time opportunities. There's a great opportunity right now because of the land values I think we would be remiss if we didn't take advantage of those jewels. I remember some of the Savage Fen and some of those other ones that really do need our protection. We need to protect this diversity. And so whether it's in the metro area or outstate, south, north, east, west, we need to use all those tools. The County Biological Survey is one wonderful tool. And if there's a jewel that needs to be protected, I'd like to hear about it.
Senator Stump.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Ms. Gibson. There was a program on TV maybe a month ago discussing the approach that I think it was, and I'm not even sure what country in Africa, but there's a lot of poaching going on and some of the what was happening in this particular country was that the animal population was going down because of obviously the poaching. So there was format that they used or they introduced was to give the responsibility of the animals back to the people, and so the native population got paid for however many animals they had, basically, and they'd take this inventory each year or each month or whatever, and the more animals they had, the more they got paid. And so they took that pretty serious because that was their livelihood. In Minnesota, and I imagine most of the states, the approach we take is basically laws. And it's the state's kind of ownership of these animals or wildlife or whatever. And have you given any thought to a different approach to managing wildlife than what we currently have? And the reason is that we have a fairly expensive system in state government and federal government. I mean, there's a lot of movements out there talking about the size of government and the cost of government and so on. Mm-hmm. Are there any new approaches that could be used that would actually reduce the cost of management and responsibility and that would work?
Ms. Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Stump, that's a very challenging question. And I am aware of several of the projects in Africa. I've been there several times, and it probably works for them because they have such a huge population surge going going on, and they have just so many pockets of wildlife areas, and so that might work better. As for Minnesota, I think there have been some privatization of some of the wildlife efforts. If you look at Ducks Unlimited and Pheasants Forever, the Bear Center, the Wolf Center, those sort of groups have taken over a lot of that responsibility. But they've typically been partners with the state and not done a lot of it on their own. Although they have the ability to go on and leverage that money with private dollars, which I think is a wonderful program. And that's one of the projects that I really like at the LCCMR, is that we are building these partnerships with other outdoor groups, so the state doesn't always have to have that, and the federal government, too, doesn't have to have that sole responsibility. But that is a challenging question, and I'm afraid if I say something too distinct on it, I'd like to come back to that question, if you wouldn't mind. So,
Mr. Chairman, just to follow up on that, well, being a legislator from northern Minnesota quite often is a challenge in the areas of public ownership and public responsibility, and then you have obviously private enterprises, farming and so on. So, but there are places where, such as up in northwestern Minnesota, where they're trying to reestablish elk herds, and mm-hmm. and obviously the depredation of some species, you know, onto others, or depredation of wildlife on domestic animals and so on. Mm-hmm. And the whole issue of how do you interrelate the private with the public, and how do you give that responsibility back to, more of a responsibility back to the people that live in a given area. I think it would facilitate a better relationship between the public and the local landowners. Relationships are difficult, at best sometimes in those areas. Mm-hmm. And some of it's related to the immense amount of public ownership and what they see as a very limited amount of return, whether it's for taxation purposes or and that affects their roads, their schools, their local government. So I think we have to work out a better relationship between what many of us cherish, and I think most people cherish, the wildlife and the public in a region. I mean, the people that live in a region.
I like your train of thought, Senator. The African issue and others. I get frustrated too when we tout all of the tourism dollars that go into a community for protecting the environment and conservation and all the vast public lands where my community and others like to go and visit, and it does help drum up business. But it's frustrating that that local community doesn't get to keep a dime of any of the sales tax dollars that are generated, and we here prevent that. I don't understand why, if a community wants to keep some of its sales tax dollars, or even wants to raise a little bit to dedicate to its local community, why can't we just allow that? It just doesn't make sense to me, and that would really, it kind of goes to what you're saying about an incentive to the local community to have people come in and enjoy the outdoors. I like what you're thinking about. Did you have a?
No, Mr. Chair and Senator Stump, thank you. You have challenged me with some very insightful questions, and I appreciate that. I think one of the things that we need to keep in mind is that the people that own the land, for the most part, really want to do the best thing they can with that land. And having been, I'm very involved with the wolf depredation program. And I think what has served that program the best is to let the landowners, in many cases, take charge of that themselves. There are other people that would not like it because they want to see wolves. But what we have found is that the wolves do get in trouble with livestock, and those are typically the animals that you don't want in the system anyway because they're just going to keep getting in trouble. I think that has been a program that has worked. And I'm not as familiar with, I know great horned owls have also caused some problems, and they're trying to work some of those issues out as well. But I also have been told that taxes near some of these natural areas tend to be high because they're so close to these natural areas, and their resale value can often be higher because of that. So there are two ways to look at that. But in bringing up the chair's idea, that might be something that we can explore. And that's also, tourism dollars are very, very important to some of these areas. I can remember a few years ago we had a lot of owls come down from the Arctic into areas around Duluth, and it was huge. All the people were so excited that I met people from Switzerland that were there to come see the great gray owls and the snowy owls. And so that was great tourism for people, and I'm sure they would love to see these influxes of owls come again. I think they will be there next year. So there's great ways to capitalize on that as well, and that brings the local dollars in.
Before we go to the motion, I just wanted to mention that we could not do justice to the two reports that we wanted to hear today, so we've rescheduled those for another time, and the folks who were going to present those are aware. Any other questions for Ms. Gibson? All right. If not, Senator Vickerman moves that the Environment and Natural Resources Committee makes a recommendation to the Senate to confirm Nancy Gibson as a commissioner of the Legislative Commission on, as a citizen member of the Legislative Commission on
citizen
Minnesota
Commission.
Resources. Legislative Citizens Commission on Minnesota Resources. Discussion. Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Ms. Gibson.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If there's no other business before the body, the meeting is adjourned. Oh, man.
Okay.
I'm out of it.
Really?